Hi, it's Pat Finelli with our 50th anniversary special, Dinner and a Movie. Order anything over $13.99 online at pizzapizza.ca or on our mobile apps and get a free 2-for-1 Cineplex movie admission. It's so easy to order from the website. Or use our app for iPhone, iPad, or Android and get a 2-for-1 Cineplex movie pass absolutely free with any order over $13.99. It's showtime at Pizza Pizza. Online only.
Order pizzapizza.ca.
I was just doing my, what would you say that was? Combination Maestro Fresh West and the MC Hammer? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I was trying to do the MC Hammer dance. Now, I actually saw him at Tropicana Field. He played after a Rays game. You know, I had like a concert series. And you know what? MC Hammer was really good. But he was good. He was great, I know. Anyhow, I don't know what brought that on. Anyhow. I hurt myself doing that. No, guys, I seriously hurt my back. That part of the body doesn't get that much movement these days, you know. I'm so old. Oh, anyhow. Sorry about that. The Hockey Central NHL signing season is Saturday on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 360. It almost makes it sound as if they're doing it just especially for Sportsnet, right? Anyhow, coverage is going to start at 11 a.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 360. It'll run until 1. Then the Jays and the Red Sox will take over, but don't worry about it. We'll have regular updates from the Hockey Central panel throughout the Jays-Red Sox game and a full recap show right after the Jays-Red Sox game on Sportsnet Ontario on Sportsnet 360. I was talking to John Shannon yesterday. Last year, it was Canada Day was the 19-inning game, right? So those poor suckers had to wait around, didn't they, for like the full 19 innings to come back or something like that? Didn't they do a recap show after the game or something like that? So they would have had to wait for the 19 innings. Anyhow, that won't happen because Chris Sale's pitching for the Red Sox. Those guys are going to have to do a lot of work because that Chris Sale, Red Sox, Jays game, that sucker's over in 2:10.
Francisco Liriano is pitching too, though.
Francisco Liriano's pitching too? It doesn't matter. It'll be 6-0 Red Sox, 5 runs in the first inning, and anyhow, it'll be done early. So there you go. That's all you need to know about Hockey Central signing and NHL signing season, which will be on Saturday. Let's bring in Ren LeVar, NHL insider and Tavia Sports. How you doing, Ren?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for asking.
Once this stuff is done, you go away for a long time, right?
Hopefully, but you never know in this business. That's the problem. You wonder if they are going to sign Carey Price, right, on July 1st. Mm-hmm. It's not happening. What kind of summer I'm going to have? That's another question.
Are they going to do that?
No, I think everybody's confident that Carey's going to be signed sooner than later. I mean, you know, it's a little bit like all the stars players of this world. Connor McDavid, I mean, you kind of put a blank check and you say, how much do you want? I'm not saying that's exactly what's happening. Obviously, there's always some talks. You cannot put $20 million per season. This is not the NFL. This is not the NBA. This is not the MLB. This is the NHL, where there's a cap, there's some rules, and you have to agree to those rules. But at the end of the day, I mean, I don't think that Peter Chiarelli was involved trying to convince Connor to take less money. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be the same thing with the Montreal Canadiens and Carey Price. I mean, at the end of the day, they decide what their fate. and especially in Carey Price situation, because he can be a UFA in 1 year. This is not going Connor McDavid story, but Carey, I think, is allowed to say, you know what, I want X amount of money for that amount of years, and this is the deal. And I don't think that there'll be much talk, much negotiation between the Canes and Carey Price camp. I mean, it is what it is. And you know that if Carey is a UFA in a year, he's going to get the money that he wants.
Mm. Almost everybody in the NHL right now talking about Connor McDavid and this this contract with the Edmonton Oilers. It looks very much as if it's going to get done. You know, we had Elliot Friedman on yesterday. And he broke it down in terms of percentage of salary cap, which Ren, I think you've done in the past. And it's an interesting way to look at it to kind of put it in context. And you know, it's a lot of money. And you know, when I say this, people are going to end up rolling their eyes. But you know, it's a lot of money. But I think you can probably make the case that in some ways, and if it was a pure open market, Connor McDavid's going to be underpaid.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, if you just look at the situation before 2012, where you know, the player share was 57% instead of 50%, which in reality is not even 50%. In reality, right now is more 43% because of all the buyouts and all the injured players and everything that needs to go on player share. It's not a real 50% when you look at it, when you look at the big picture. So that's why the escrow is so high. But it is what it is. That's the reality of what they need to work on and what they need to work around. That, and you know what? The system is not a bad system because it allows, I think, teams like Edmonton to be profitable, to have really good players in on their team, to pay big money for those players. I mean, the thing is, that's why I always go back to Sidney Crosby. You look at Sidney Crosby's salary, obviously he was capable of getting more years because it was the quote-unquote old system compared to 2013, when starting in 13 you had to a max of 8 years. That you can have if you're signing with your own team, 7 years if you're a UFA and you're signing with another team. So it's a different animal for Sidney, but at the end of the day, he took way less money to be a Pittsburgh Penguin and to stay there for a long time. I imagine, I guess in my wildest dream, that Connor McDavid will accept not 13 and a quarter, but I guess more around 11 million to free some cap space. I said, you know what? What's the real difference here? When you think about it, when you think at the big picture, 2 million per year is not going to change anything in your bank account, really. If you look at, obviously, if you put that 8 years further, it's 16 million. Yes, it's a lot of money. But I imagine that Connor McDavid would have taken Sidney Crosby's page and say, you know what, I'm going to take less money to make sure that we're going to go win that Stanley Cup. But now Peter Chiarelli is going to be, he will have to be, imaginative in a way to find a solution to that problem. Like right now, the Canadian dollar is going higher. Is it going to last? That's you know, a great question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be over 80 cents soon? That's another great question. If it is, I think there'll be no problem for the Edmonton Oilers to manage the cap. If it's going to 85 cents, where it should be historically, I think it's going to give a lot of teams more leverage and more power to make deals and find solution to their cap issues. But if the Canadian dollar is staying at 76, 77 cents, I wonder, it's always the same thing. You have a good team, you're trying to win, but you need to manage the cap. And this is you're going to say the problem for every team. It doesn't seem like it's a big problem for the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's okay. But it's for a general manager who's trying to win a Stanley Cup. It's a real problem, especially for Peter Chiarelli, because at the end of the day, you have to win a Stanley Cup. And like, I think Peter knows that he needs to win a Stanley Cup sooner than later. Well, you know, when the expectations are high, they are really high. It's not like the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. I don't think that anybody expect the Toronto Maple Leafs to win the Stanley Cup next season. But can we look at the Edmonton Oilers right now? They have older players and say, you know what, this is a possibility. Yes, it is. Yes, it is a possibility. In my mind, there is no doubt about that. So pressure is going to be high. And that's why I think Peter Chiarelli needs to find a way to make sure that this team is going to be capable of competing hard. And not only that, try to win the Stanley Cup or be in the Stanley Cup final next season.
Conversation with Ren Lvov, TVA Sports and the Journal de Montréal. Which free agent interests you particularly right now? Of the guys out there? What's the name? What name has got your attention?
Well, obviously, it's easy for me to say Alex Radulov because I saw him play all season long. I mean, you look at all the forwards available. I mean, he's the best one by far. I mean, and now he's asking for 6 years, $7 million per season. And I understand why he's doing that. He's doing that because he knows that there's a market for him. And so let's wait and see what's going to happen. I know Pittsburgh. Well, there was some players on the Pittsburgh side. Evgeny Malkin was interested in bringing him to Pittsburgh, but I'm not convinced that that's the road that Alex wants to take. I mean, I think he's really trying to hit a home run here. Maybe not going on a Stanley Cup contender, taking less money and I guess less terms. So I'm not convinced it's going to happen. I think it was out there a few days after the Stanley Cup final, but after I guess a couple of phone calls talking to Jim Rutherford, I don't think he's going to take that road or he's going to be capable to do that. So anyway, there's at least 12 teams interested right now. Yes, the Montreal Canadiens wants to have him back, but I'm not sure they're ready to give a 6-year contract I don't think the money is a problem. That's $7 million. I don't think that's a big problem. I think the real problem here is the 6-year contract. I mean, if Radulov will accept a 4-year contract with the Montreal Canadiens, I believe that will be a feasible deal to be made. But he wants, and it's fully understandable why he wants more years. You know, it's obvious that when you're 30, 31 years old, you're trying to get the max, maybe a 7-year contract. So let's see what's going to happen, but I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued what's next with him. I know there's a lot of teams interested. You have to look at the Detroit Red Wings. They were around him, remember, a year ago. They thought that, you know, Radulov will be a Red Wing before Marc Bergevin was capable of bringing him to Montreal. Even the Red Wings offered a 2-year deal to him, which he refused. He wanted to play in Montreal. So I guess there's still some hope, but with the Red Wings going in a new building, I think they want to hit a home run quickly, bring the fans together again. So and they need to make the playoffs. So I think if I'm the Red Wings right now, I'm looking at Radulov, and I'm pretty sure they're going to try everything to get him.
What do you think the Leafs do in around this period? Do you think that they sort of keep their powder dry and, you know, are focused on maybe making some sort of a trade to address their defense? Because they're really, I mean, the guy out there that seems to, a lot of people seem to be talking about would be a guy like Michael Stone. I mean, I don't think the Jays or the Leafs are all that necessarily thrilled about Kevin Shattenkirk, but if you get a guy like Stone, you've kind of got him. You've already got a guy like Stone.
Yeah, but you know what? I feel like right now, I like the way they manage their team. they're looking at the big picture, which is, I think, the best way to deal with a young team like that. You cannot jumpstart your team. You have to understand what's in front of you. And you can't, you know, jeopardize your future because you want to make a big deal right now that's maybe going to be costly in a year or two. So that's why I really like their approach. They're not out there trying to hit a home run. It's obvious that they're going to try to get another defenseman. The good news, Jeff, when you look at it, there's a lot of good defensemen available on the UFA market, or even if you want to make a trade. So I think that everything's possible for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. The priority is quite simple. It's a defenseman. That's what they need. Should they have more depth offensively? Everybody wants more depth offensively, but I think the real priority right now is to get a good defenseman, a kind of a stay-home defenseman. But let's see what's going to happen. I mean, you never know. They can get a phone call from a team today. I think today is an important day in the NHL. It's 48 hours before the July 1st. Remember what happened last year?
Yep.
A year ago. I mean, we had that 30 minutes that was a little crazy with PK Subban being traded. So and Steven Stamkos being signed. So you look at today. Today's a big day. I'm pretty sure that's the way every GM's approach. This day. So maybe today we'll learn something about the Maple Leafs that they make a trade, or maybe you're going to wait for July 1st to make their move. So I think the next 48 hours are going to be interesting, but do I believe that we're going to see a major trade involving Toronto? Not at all.
What do you think teams learned from that Subban for Weber trade last year, which you're right was made around this time? What do you think teams learned from that?
That's a tricky question. I mean, there's a lot of things to be learned. It's a little crazy, Jeff. When you look at that trade, I think we're still going to talk about it in 20 years. Why I'm saying that, it's because there's such a big gap between what the fans believe or what the fans think and what teams think about that trade and that move.
Mm-hmm.
And the gap, I've never seen a gap like that. Even today, I was listening to the radio here in Montreal. And, you know, you were listening to the people or, you know, the hosts. And it's like they traded Wayne Gretzky to
right.
to the Predators. PK Subban is a really good defenseman, but he's not Wayne Gretzky. Mm-hmm. And it's like they didn't get anything in return. I mean, you just need to walk around Bridgestone Arena, okay, to see how big Shea Weber is even today. You think that they got rid of every pictures of him? You think that they said, you know what, Shea is part of the past, we need to turn the page? No, that's not the way they think about that. You talk to the players and they're all up. They were saying, and you've heard that, players saying, you know what, we feel bad for Shea. We feel bad that he's not here enjoying this with us because he deserved to be here. That was not a shot to PK Subban, not at all. But what I'm saying is, you know, there's a lot of people who look at PK. They look at what's going on, the way he's playing. He's just unbelievable. I mean, sometimes he's doing plays that are magical on the ice, and that's the reason why he's in my mind still one of the best defensemen in the league. But that being said, after that there's the culture that you want to bring in your franchise, and this is a totally different animal, and that's why that trade was made a year ago, because Marc Bergevin wanted to change the culture of his franchise. You're gonna say, well, it didn't work out. They only played one round. Well, it didn't work out. They finished first in their division. They weren't capable of scoring goals. Is this Shea Weber's fault? Was it Carey Price's fault? You need to take a deep breath and say, you know what, this is just the first year. And I mean, being around Shea Weber a little bit, not as a player, but obviously as a reporter, you know that he's a special person. Like, PK's a special person too, but they're two different people. Two different people. PK really likes the attention, and that's okay. But at the end of the day, that's not the way Shea Weber works. He wants the attention to be on the team, not on himself. He wants to be, kind of a captain of that team, even if he's not wearing the C. Do you think that he's not helping Max Pacioretty being a better captain? That's part of his DNA. I think we're still going to talk a lot about that trade, to be honest with you. But you have to wonder, and, you know, is PK Subban going to finish his career in Nashville? Even a month and a half ago, there were some rumors that he wouldn't be protected for the expansion draft. Obviously, he was, for good reason. But when you're hearing rumblings left and right, sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not true. But at the end of the day, I mean, we're still going to debate, but there's one thing for sure. When you're talking to especially fans in Montreal about PK Subban, it's one-sided. And it's, you know what, we're missing him. We wish that he would be even today a Montreal Canadian. But just remember one thing, Jeff, and that this is the reality. When I'm talking about the gap between fans and, you know, teams and players, remember that they salute PK in Montreal before the game here when Nashville was in town. Do you know how many Montreal Canadiens players stand up during that tribute?
How many?
None.
Interesting.
I'm not taking a shot here.
That's fair. I think people understand that.
I don't want to put the attention on Nick in a negative way to PK. That's not what I'm doing here. I just want to tell people exactly what happened. Obviously, we didn't report that much. You know what? Because this was a tribute to PK, and you don't want to. The next day, talk about the fact that none of his ex-teammates stand up for the tribute. I mean, the reality is that tribute was really well done. PK was emotional on the ice. I mean, it was kind of a party for him, for the Predators, and in a way for the Montreal Canadiens fans. So, you know the business we're working on. It's entertainment. But the reality is, what shocked a lot of people with the media is that none of his ex-teammates stand up for that tribute. I can tell you one thing, in Nashville, when they did that tribute to Shea Weber, everybody was standing up.
Interesting stuff, Ren. Appreciate you doing this, as always.
No problem.
Should be a good
weekend. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Yeah.
It's Ren Lavoie, our NHL insider from TVS Sports and the Journal de Montréal. I had not heard that story before about PK Subban, at least not told that way by Ren. And again, Hockey Central NHL signing season is Saturday. Coverage on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 360, starts at 11 a.m. And it'll run up until 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 360 at that point, Blue Jay Central will be on Sportsnet Ontario at 12:30. The coverage of NHL signing season runs up until 1 in Sportsnet 360. Then the Jays take over. There will be regular updates from the Hockey Central panel throughout the Jays-Red Sox game. And then a full recap show right after the Jays-Red Sox on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 360. So you can spend your Canada Day, take the TV outside. Maybe you got one of those nice little outside TVs. You're up at the lake. You can watch a Jays game against the Red Sox. You're not going to miss anything that happens at the as the NHL's free agent frenzy, or the NHL's signing season gets into full gear. Jason Dorland is a Canadian Olympian rower. He's also a coach. He's written a new book, Pulling Together, Unlock the Secrets to Uncover True Potential. He's got some controversial views on coaching, how we develop athletes, and how we help athletes, not just how we help athletes maintain, while they're performing, but how we help athletes succeed post-career. And there are lessons in that, not just for athletes, but for those of us who are very much non-athletes. Jason Dorland will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
All you downtrodden people always bear the brunt. Just sit back on your fat backside till you have to face the front.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. Baseball Central at 11 o'clock. Kevin Barker joins me. Justin Smoke, first baseman of the Toronto Blue Jays, will be along 11:35 as well. Jason Dorland is a former Canadian Olympian and coach. He was a Olympic rower, part of the national team. He has written a book, Pulling Together a Coach's Journey to Uncover the Mindset of True Potential. His earlier book was Chariots and Horses, Life Lessons from an Olympic Rower. And Jason Dorland has got some interesting observations on how we coach athletes, how we handle athletes once their playing careers are finished, and the lessons we can take from that and put them towards towards what we do in our daily lives, or what we do as whether it's businessmen or broadcasters or whatever line of work we're in. We're very pleased to be joined by Jason Dorland. Jason, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah,
welcome to welcome to Toronto. Welcome to Toronto traffic.
Thanks.
We were talking off air, and I said people always just assume that the traffic's this bad in the summer because of construction. And I say no, it's always bad. So, tell us a little bit first of all your background, and then about this book in particular.
Well, I think like so many young Canadian athletes, my journey began as a young boy, growing up in St. Catharines, which was a rowing community. And I went to a quote-unquote rowing school. Ridley College had quite a reputation for rowing during the late 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And I fell sort of into the middle of that early 1980s and rowed for Neil Campbell, who was Order of Canada member and two-time Olympian, won the Canadian gold medal in 84, coaching the men's eight. And I was part of that eight, that defending Olympic eight in 1988 in Seoul. And we went there with high expectations. Certainly the nation had high expectations for us. I know I had high expectations. And we found ourselves in the Olympic final, and things didn't go to plan. So we finished dead last in that final, and it was a moment that I wasn't prepared for.
Was that situation, was that result the thing, is that the thing that still drives you to write and talk about the athletic mind? Is it still, because that was 88, so we're talking a fair amount of time, is that still a driving thing for you?
Well, it was the catalyst for sure,
right?
I mean, when you know, when you blow up on the world stage, it's a moment that doesn't go away all too quickly, right? And yeah, I had to reassess, and over the next few years, there were some challenging times, which we know about now. It was unspoken back then, but athlete transition is a big issue, and that sort of silver medal syndrome, if you will. And I experienced all of what we would consider normal moments, and
right.
So in terms of that race, it started it, right? It began the journey of really asking some tough questions. Why was I rowing? Who was this about? What had I made that Olympic gold medal mean? What did I think it was going to bring me? And the answers to many of those questions weren't healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had become a very bitter, angry young man in my second attempt for 92, and revenge and redemption was the ticket. And, you know, it worked, no surprise. It worked really well for about a year or so. And then it blew up in an ugly way. And I left the sport. You know, then in 94, I met my wife now mm-hmm. on a sort of quote-unquote blind date, and it was a week before the Commonwealth Games, which Victoria was hosting, and she had a final of the women's 3,000-meter coming up. And before the race on this date, I asked, so, you know, what are you expecting? Are you going to win this race or what? And she said, well, I'm just going to go out there and do my best. I've had an off season. I'm not really feeling all that prepared. And I was aghast at that reply that, mm-hmm. you know, who goes into an international final with the goal of doing your best? It was just absurd. And I was embarrassed for her. Fast forward a week, I sat there and watched an unprepared runner, physically perhaps, and certainly mentally as far as I was concerned, go from last place in the opening lap to a silver medal. Mm-hmm. And to my shock and amazement, I was caught off guard because that result, that performance, made no sense to me from what I had been taught as a young athlete.
Right. Do you find now, because we being Canada as a country, I mean, we've started to have some success. You know, we had tremendous success in winter sports. We're starting to have a fair amount of success now in some of the summer sports. I mean, we've got Andre DeGrasse, Penny Oleksiak. These are people who've become almost part of the culture now. They're almost cultural touchstones in a lot of ways. Is that maybe more of an issue now, Jason, because now that people are winning a lot of gold medals, doing your best maybe doesn't matter as much? Does that concern you that there's almost a boomerang effect of success? It's that, hey, everybody's starting to win a gold medal now. Where'd you finish? Well, I won a bronze. Oh, okay. But, you know, is there a boomerang effect there, do you think?
I think it depends on who you're talking to. And the crazy part of it is that that gold medal or that bronze medal might have been the result of a mindset that was determined to do their best.
Mm-hmm.
And in my coaching world, that would certainly be the mindset that I would imbue upon the athletes was, look, we're going to go out there and, given all of the circumstances, show up and have our best race on the day. And mm-hmm. and if things go the way we think they can, there's a high probability we're going to win. But there's also a chance we might not. And what I always say to athletes that I work with today is, you know, look, if you're okay with winning and if you're okay with losing, then you're more prepared for this performance
right.
than you would be if all you're worried about is not winning.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just set yourself up for that, you know, for that paradox of the more I'm worried about losing, the more I'm drawn to actually lose. And that is always the challenge when I meet with coaches is, what do you mean you don't focus on winning? It's that's the point of this. And I say, yeah, I get it. So don't overstate it.
Right.
Set your goal bigger than winning. And then the winning will come as a byproduct.
What do you want people to take away from this book, Pulling Together, A Coach's Journey to Uncover the Mindset of True Potential?
Well, first of all, I think it's a remarkable story. I mean, obviously I'm biased. I lived it and I watched those young men do what they did and go through the challenges that they had. And so, you know, but on the back of that story mm-hmm. is the philosophy that I discovered in the first book, Chariots and Horses. So I was a combative athlete. I was a combative coach. Everything was about winning. The competition was the enemy. The point was to kill them. And it worked for a long time. And then when I met Robin and I saw her compete at a high level for 17 years on the national team and run her fastest times at the end of her career, I thought, well, hold on, you know, there's got to be something to this notion of just finding your best performance on the day.
But is, you know what, is it easier for an athlete in an individual sport to do that? I mean, I wonder about that compared to a team sport where it's not just you, right? It's seven other people.
Right.
And is it maybe easier for that individual athlete to sort of find that happy, if you want to call it that happy spot?
Well, you know, again, I would say it depends on the sport, right? The team is a culmination of individuals, but in the culture that I would build with a crew, with a team sport like rowing, was this notion that to try and create a culture where the athletes felt more committed to racing for one another than for themselves.
Okay.
So you take the ego out of that equation and you make it all about, well, I mean, I use the word love.
Mm-hmm.
You want to create love in that boat so that when athletes line up at the start line, They are there to serve the members of that crew. That is more important to them than what they're going to get out of this. And when you can step into that sort of environment, you're going to do some pretty cool stuff.
In conversation with Jason Dorland on the Jeff Blair Show, we have this stress point, it seems, in sports in Canada in particular. I don't know, it may exist in the U.S., but the idea, sort of the own the podium idea, we're going to build people to win gold medals, and but don't forget the people who may not be good enough to be national caliber athletes, but still want to take part in a sport because it's good for the mind, it's good for the body, it's an important part of their life. How do we, and you'd be in a unique position to talk about this, how do we find that balance and do it in such a way that we don't, and we talked a little bit about this off air, that we don't lose a young athlete at 16 or 17 because they just, he or she just decides, you know what, I can just do something else with my time.
Right. How about 13? 70% of Canadian youth are leaving organized sport at the age of 13.
Really?
So that's a frightening statistic.
To go and play video games.
To go do something else.
Yeah.
Right? So forget about diminishing the pool. If we look at it as on a bigger scale, we have 2/3 of the population growing up in Canada who will become leaders, business people, politicians, what have you, having not had the opportunity to take away all of the incredible life lessons that sport has the capacity to teach. And as a Canadian citizen, I find that a really frightening dilemma. So, my angle is, look, we need to bring the fun back into this, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to regain the plot because I believe we've lost the plot. We have made it all about owning something, in this case, podiums, and this hyper-vigilant push to land on a podium to win things has created a culture where children are no longer enjoying their experience. And they're stepping out of it because parents, coaches, organizations, teams have taken the reins and they've made it about what they want. And the athlete is no longer the center of the experience. It's no longer an athlete-centric culture. It has become about sponsors and coaches. And I just think, Canadians need to really have a hard look at where we're going with sport in this country and ask, what is the purpose of this? And if the answer isn't the athlete, if it isn't children, then I would argue that's the wrong answer because it has to be about the children, the athletes. And we're seeing what happens when it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't correct course, it's going to go to 75 and it's going to go to 80. And the paradox in this, the crazy irony in this is that we are in this pursuit of winning, in this pursuit of becoming national, in this international dominator in individual sports, we're going to get in the way of us actually achieving that. And that's the crazy part of it.
So what has to happen to prevent that? Because, it seems like you're almost talking about an institutional mindset as much as a cultural mindset.
And
that's hard to change.
It is hard to change, but it doesn't mean we don't try.
Right.
And my experience in Seoul is what drives me, to get back to your original question. What I went through was preventable. What so many athletes go through was preventable. And it's not just the athletes who lose, right? Michael Phelps is the poster child for athletes who win 18 Olympic gold medals and still crash.
Yeah.
So when we hold these medals up to be the be all and end all to the journey, and they get there and realize, well, nothing about me has changed. That's a moment where they realize, well, okay, so what did I miss? What part of that wasn't explained to me?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to win a medal to fill a hole, I got news for you. The hole's still going to be there when you win that medal.
Right.
And, that's the human experience. It's the same in, when I have a car, when I own this car, I'm going to be a different person. We all know it doesn't work that way. Medals are no different. So we need to redefine what is the purpose of sport. What are we hoping our athletes are going to take from their experience in sport?
The book is Pulling Together, A Coach's Journey to Uncover the Mindset of True Potential. And Jason, you are going to be, there's 4 dates, book launch dates. The one was at St. Catharines Ridley College,
right.
The most recent one.
June 29th. Toronto was last night.
Yeah. night.
We've got a Calgary and Edmonton one coming up in early August.
The book sounds terrific. I am definitely going to take a look at it. It's called Pulling Together, A Coach's Journey to Uncover the Mindset of True Potential. The first book, Chariots and Horses, Life Lessons from an Olympic Rower. Very quickly, because we've only got a minute left here. What message do you want? Because there will be parents who are listening to this show, right, and there'll be kids listening to the show, athletes. What message do you want them? Do you want them to take away?
Yeah, I just think the focus needs to be back on what is best for the child. And 12 months of the year being in one sport at the age of 8 or 9, I'm sorry, that's not best for the child. When I was a kid, when you were a kid, mm-hmm, I'm assuming, 3-5 sports minimum in a year.
Baseball, tennis, basketball.
You bet. Develop the athlete first. Let the specialist come from that.
Yeah.
At age appropriate, should we specialize? Sure. I don't have a problem with that. But from 8 to 16, we should be developing the athlete, the person, and let the high performer come from that place.
Jason, thank you very much for joining us. It's been great.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Jason Dorlan, Olympic, former Olympian and coach. And again, the title of the book is Pulling Together, A Coach's Journey to Uncover the Mindset of True Potential. Jason, thanks again. Kevin Barker will join me. Justin Smoke as well. Baseball Central's next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.